In an ever-changing world, we need to keep track of what will be next. Forward Thinkers is your 48 Forward podcast to discover the future. We are talking to innovative and creative minds from all over the world to learn more about what they are working on and what they think will change the way we work and live within the next decade. Are you ready to join the ride? Welcome to Forward Thinkers.
Maybe to start with, we've met many years ago already. We both actually, I think Alexander was also an attendee at the very first 48 Forward Festival, as far as I remember, about 10 years ago. And I think we did a podcast shortly after that, more or less. So you are well experienced with the topics we are talking about. You're both working for rather big corporations. Maybe to start with, why do you think it's important that we bring startups in? Because, you know, you both have like a massive workforce. You've been around for like many, many decades. There's so much going on. You've got budget, you've got talent, you've got international experience. Why does it make sense to bring startups in at all?
Good. Also, I'm working for Wirth Electronic, and we belong to the bigger Wirth Group. I'm now 28 years in Wirth Electronics, and we were started as a startup. That's a funny story in behind. We started our business in a garage as an idea of Reinhold Wirth saying, let's try to go for electronics business. So the startup mentality is somehow incorporated. And even in the DNA of Wirth, it's one of the sayings is you can fail. And in startups, you say fail faster, but don't do the same mistake twice. So a bit of this is our DNA, so to say. And when we were starting, we were seen as, in German, it's Jugendforscht, we call it, yeah. We were newcomers in the market, and now we are market leader in Europe in the passive components range, which is not so bad, I would say. And then it's a thing that personally, I had a startup. I was failing in my startup because I could not get one single component to make my thing with my colleague working. And it was a sent component, and we were denied to get it in the second run because this distributor said, you're too small. I don't know what your business is about, so we don't support you. Okay, the positive trend is I'm here now. We can talk about this. I'm now in the CTO, the leader in R&D and technology for this company. And so we have two things here. The one thing is for the startup, why it's important for us, because we feel and still see, and it also fits very good with Infineon. On the other side is we see that the startup, the hardware startup we look into, they have it really hard to find good support. And so we don't take them all into our as a corporation because it's too many we support nowadays. Some of them we have incorporated into our company, but very randomly and very rarely. The most important for us is really hardware startups, give them the right support from the beginning because they have a hard time. The times go faster and design in and design wins. You have to go every single day faster and faster to understand everything what we do on the component side, even on the hardware side. Semiconductor side, we have to learn so many things. But we say we have a good knowledge and a good experience. We want to share this experience and give you the best support from the beginning as a hardware idea you have and found, and that your idea can really go fastest to market. Having put all of these limitations out of the way, design errors or redesigns are needed sometimes. That's the basic idea in behind of us. So that's why we do this. But as said before, we don't have taken too many of them. We have three incorporated now in the Wirth Electronic Group from different fields. But the general approach is give a general support into all these hardware startups, make them faster time to market, because that's when innovation takes place, market, getting market, finding your customers, and that creates new jobs, hopefully, and new things. That's our thing where we say we want to give something back into the community.
Yeah, maybe from an Infineon perspective. So first of all, from my perspective, we can also talk in German. Yeah, it's no problem.
Yeah, I think there was a wish to do it in English.
So it's not okay. Good, fine. At Infineon, I joined Infineon 7 years ago, and I built up the startup cooperation activities. The mission has stayed the same. So we want to work with the best startups worldwide to accelerate also innovation at Infineon. Yeah, that's on a general level why we do it, and. I mean, in the last 20, 30 years, I mean, the startup ecosystem globally has grown so much worldwide. I mean, beyond Silicon Valley, in Europe, in Asia. So if you look at just the money, the VC money that flows into startups versus corporate R&D spending, you see that the money flowing into startups is higher than what corporates invest into R&D. So the innovative potential that is out there in startups, VC funded or not, globally is much higher than we could ever have as a semiconductor company here in Europe. So for us, it's essential to work with the best innovators out there. As I said, to drive, of course, also innovation at Infineon. So we work with startups in three categories mostly. So one, hardware companies who are building the next generation of devices, new electronic systems, generally speaking, be it in cars, in mobility, be it in IoT, be it in industrial contexts. The second category is go-to-market partners. So whenever a startup has something that is complementary to our own offering, like software, for example, that we can combine with our products, it's more a go-to-market partnership, where we then build new systems together and promote it to our customers. And the third one is R&D, R&D corporations. So these are all the companies, startups that develop new chips, new semiconductors, new materials that enable next generation of semiconductors. So these are more R&D corporations. And we get, of course, early access to new technologies that are actively being commercialized, that are beyond the research stage in the university. So they really have a roadmap towards a product to commercialize the technology, and that's why we want to engage with those companies.
Alex, so we already talked about AI, and we want to continue to also talk about AI, but you already told us you're a hardware company. Why is AI even important to you?
Also, we have three things where we look into AI from the perspective of innovation. One is, of course, the knowledge transfer. We heard it just from the beginning. We already had also in our incorporation long time ago AI things where we described a special topic in the electronics by a good measurement database. It was expectedly really needed to have a very good database, which created over years. Out of this, we made then the large language model on top to have the best innovation, best information for the designers out there. You call it nowadays to make the digital twin, or get the best simulation results out there, because there was a big misunderstanding in between of all the models and the descriptions and the textbooks and the practical measurements. So to close this gap, so if I go into my CAD design, so to say, that I get already the best information, if I then go for my first prototype, I'm close to reality to close this gap. And here AI helps us a lot. First, on the it's really how to describe this loss model, what we have created, the best under all operating conditions you can find out there. This was done over years. This is already in the market. It's the best model we can have in the market right now. No one can compete by now. The other thing is, of course, we see the experts, young engineering people get less and less in the universities and technical schools. And we expect from them that they know what we could learn in 10 or 12 years. We have time to learn in a much more faster time now. When you look today in a sensor, it's not a sensor at all. We had in the past years this analog sensor thing. It's a mix. It's an analog part of the sensor, which I have to understand fully, but then also have to understand the digital part of it. Who wants to read an 80-page big data sheet? So that's where we can put AI into the game and say, you don't have to know everything, but we guide you. And if you put your requests on that topic here, it programs for you all the register set and brings the best output performance, whatever, into the game. that helps the young engineer teams coming now to get without any, how to say, fears into designs. Because as a boss, you ask the team to make a fast design to market, fast time to market, and I have to learn everything infinite small time. So AI plays a role to give knowledge transfer, because the tasks and the topics I have to do getting more and more. As we see how many engineers missing, 20,000 per year are missing, 8,000 come new into the game. So it's really hard without the right transfer of knowledge. So that's where AI comes into the game, and we have to build, and we are just building our internal expert system to support these cases here, to have the best information right away and really the best information. That's what we built right now. And third topic where we look into, of course, is the energy consumption of AI, where we all work on, even as on the Infineon side, to save energy on this. Models can do one game here, but power supply and powering the devices and make the best power supply is the other thing. So we have three things where we actively work on with AI or for AI.
How is AI impacting Infineon's business?
First of all, we see the topic of edge AI as our home turf from a market perspective. So we believe that local AI in your coffee machine, in your washing machine, in the car, so intelligence without being connected necessarily to the cloud, will grow in the future. There will be lots more and more smart devices in the future. Then if machines get smarter, also of course the topic of many of those devices are battery powered, so the topic of low energy is very important. That's also where we focus with our product, so low power microcontrollers. The other thing, of course, the benefit of edge AI is lower latency. So you don't need to send data up to the cloud and down. You can have a direct interaction with your device. And the third point is privacy, data privacy. So because the data stays locally in your machine. So that's why we believe edge AI is a big market for Infineon in the future. And our product portfolio is geared a lot to enable edge AI and all these IoT applications. And that's also where we work mostly in the startup cooperation program. That's the area where we work with companies, with startups. For example, companies that have software networks, AI networks, that have don't need a lot of compute power, that can fit in a small device. And nevertheless, do a good job there. And the second one, any company that still drives energy consumption down while doing those calculations in the machine. So these are two areas where we actively look for startups. And then, of course, on the corporate level, where we are less involved, is also what you said, of course, to optimize all kinds of internal processes, but also solutions to enable our customers to work with our products. For example, like to answer a technical question. So every customer may have buys a sensor from us. They have a technical questions. In the past, they need to find a technical resource who can answer maybe those questions. Now they can just type their question onto our webpage and they get the answer for this technical problem. So these are things that basically make it easier for our customers to use our products in their systems.
Alex, what role do startups already play within your AI ecosystem?
As we have have incorporated them to a certain extent to make cross-referencing, call it this way, as we have to see which components out there, which can be bring into a more active play. Then we have also incorporated, but that's not a startup, it's more a system, the whole innovation process in a system like this, because you want to know a bit more about the idea of that what comes to market or should go to market, about all the market in behind, the competition in the market that can be really automated and better watched in an automated system, but AI driven, because you give the targets where to search and to look for and to come to a better decision. Is this product good for market or not? What is the competition level out there? What's eventually pricing levels out there? To really streamline your market approach, to say this is how we should go to market, or concentrate the argumentation for the market or find the right market. That's where it plays a role. And then it's where we incorporate, or let's say we put them into the game, where we find and have to find new solutions. So where we see, we are supporting also one case of how to create now new designs, where we have a cooperation with Celus from TUM in Munich, where we say, okay, we put a lot of activity here to put our reference designs in and then see how this develops, that out of this later on, automated designs can be made. It's a big thing now in the market. Can we create new designs out of scratch in an AI system? And so we are really actively looking here for new companies or ideas to do this. It's still a way to go, but it will be, and it's an exponential learning curve in behind. So that's where we see a lot of activities going and also some good changes coming. Also, quality goes up. Yeah.
Lamin, with all your experience in working with startups in a corporate system, what do you think are the most important steps to start with when it comes to onboarding a startup?
I think, first of all, we have to be convinced that a startup can be successful. They are in a technology area that, in a market where we ourselves believe this is an emerging application, this is a growing market, and the startup is in there. Then, of course, we meet the team. and there, of course, we find out very early, do they know what they are doing? What is their background? Do they have a clear vision where they want to go, where the product is targeted for? So these are the little things that give us the conviction, yes, they do something interesting and they can be successful in the future. And then, of course, they have to... it's always good to have to understand also the corporate world a bit from a startup perspective. In the sense that yes, in a corporate there are more alignments. We cannot decide from one day to the next. We have different projects. Each employee has different projects at the same time. Sometimes it's a question of timing and priority that we can move forward. So this kind of understanding for the corporate world from the startup side makes things easier. Of course, we as a startup co-innovation team, we see ourselves as the ambassador for the startup. So we also, of course, push internal colleagues to follow close the agreed timelines, to take fast decisions. So this is our role, to facilitate this interactions on both sides and to define a clear scope for cooperation.
Now, maybe to add on, as where we look, of course, into is who's the founder team. Is the founder really in behind of his product, or she in behind of that product? Is the understanding there for the market, eventually market? Problems for going into market, they have a clear vision on the market and how to really, what's the differentiation, the value stream for the customers? Why should they change to your idea? What is so, let's say, outstanding new to the market? The more you find new thing, an extraordinary thing, but was not there in the market before, the more easy it is to get into the market. If it's only a small incremental step, it's even more harder to find then the differentiation part here, and then to find and help them guiding in this way to market. But first of all, it's the founder and the team in behind. Do we fit? It's not only the founder has to fit to, from his or her experience, does it also fit to me as a company? Because if we don't fit together, we should not go into a corporation, that's clear.
In the best possible case, you both sides benefit from a knowledge transfer, from a enablement into both directions, and maybe even like a little bit of a culture transfer in both directions. If we are talking about knowledge, how do you ensure that knowledge transfer actually works? And is there are there certain tools you're using or processes or whatever other idea you might have to ensure that knowledge is not just getting lost between those two parties and between those two cultures in the end?
I would say that there is no formal process to enable this knowledge transfer. I would say what's important is that the colleague at Infineon who is driving the business or he's interested in a certain technology, he should interact directly with the startup. So it's of not a lot of use if I talk to the startup, because then knowledge transfer does not happen to the business. So we are just a matchmaker, a middleman, an interface, but we want to make sure that our business functions, the one who is responsible for microcontroller business, for example, engages with a startup that claims to develop the next generation of low power microcontrollers. So and then of course this know-how transfer happens both ways. We get insights about the technology of the startup, also about their view of the market and the market opportunities, the niches maybe that they target that we were not aware before. On the one hand, the other way around is, for example, we test their product in our labs, and then of course we have feedback about that. We have measurement data. We can give it back to the startup as well as a feedback and give our view about where to target this device, which could be a good target market from our perspective. So then know-how flows in both directions, and this is exactly this win-win situation that you mentioned. But we need an active conversation and regular interactions with the people who drive the business.
It's, we heard it just before about change management. If it's very close to my department and this thing we bring now in as a startup idea is and brings the fear in that it kills my job, then I'm of course a bit more reluctant to give any kind of information. I would try not invent it here, whatever, to say don't let this startup grow because my job goes out of scope here. That is what we then have to ensure from the top management side to really bring this fear out if it's not the case and not to block this here. But we are in a more comfortable situation right now, Infineon and us, because we have in our startup programs, we look into a wide range of hardware startups. So it's not directly blocking my businesses. No, it's even accelerating our businesses. So whatever we can do to help them to get faster helps us when they go successfully to market to boost our sales as well. We have to be honest here. It's also, of course, we do this support of hardware startups to have new markets, new customers, new sales into the market. So then it's even more easier for our teams to support them on this way to get the best application running. Then it's not change management is not really then the blocker here. Yeah, but if it's really close to us, or also my learning, we have to take care that we don't have too much fears, and by the fear we say not invented here, because it can be a full showstopper. So we have to really be careful how we link the teams together and bring out this fear of you're not needed anymore for the next day.
How and where do you find startups you're working with? Is it like, do you have like a European only scope, or is it rather international? And is there like, do you have scouts that are working on just that topic to find interesting startups?
I mean, we have a global setup. So we have colleagues in the US, in Asia, in Europe. I think that, I mean, there's no secret sauce. I think that we use the common databases, startup databases for scouting. Whenever we identify a topic of interest internally from the business stakeholder, we of course can do targeted scouting. But then of course there's this lot of inbound traffic where startups come to our webpage and apply. We are introduced by a venture capital investor who thinks we should work together. We go to a conference. So last week I was, for example, at Slush, where lots of startups meet. So this is another channel where we, of course, get new ideas that we didn't have on our topic list before, but we nevertheless think they are relevant for Infineon and we should engage. And then, of course, we have to convince also the business people behind that this is indeed the case and they do have something interesting. But yeah, it's both ways. So classical scouting tools, but also lots of inbound connections and this network to the ecosystem, to investors, to incubators, accelerators, like here we are a corporate partner in the TUM Venture Labs or Excite Lab Accelerator in Dresden. So these networks are super important.
Again, we are in a more comfortable situation because Würth DNA is sales. We have a lot of sales teams around the globe. So in our case, for Würth Electronics, our component, we have in and about 1,000 sales, including the field application engineers. So we have daily contact, so to say, to customers, where we then can see some of the ideas is really needed to get a better support than the normal daily support by visit or by sample sending, whatever. And then, of course, we're in these bigger startup centers like Motion Lab in Berlin or Makerspace in Munich or NextGen here in Stuttgart, now more concentrated, and so on. We go for the big fairs, as you mentioned, like Slush or these things happening, or 48 Forward, which is also a bit forward-thinking things here. That's where we have then our scouting teams, which then look into different topics. And internally, we have then Innovation World Cup, where we go together and jointly with on the market. Because of a bigger database than us, we can do. And then we, of course, will start a new campaign in the next year where we call it then Electronics for Positive Impact, where we want to accelerate really things which make a change and are not only about an IoT project, for an IoT project, so to say. It's about changes being made. Like last time, we had the High Droop as a water scarcity. Then we have Hula Earth, where we support it for biodiversity measurements. So we will go really on the more green and really, with really an impact aspect, and it makes way to market. That's where we then push on. That's how we do it, and we can handle it from this team, so to say, supporting that.
I think we all are struggling with sustainability, but especially looking at your both core business models, so to say, I think it's a very important part. You kind of enabling sustainability, and on the other hand, Infineon creating products that use a lot of energy or need a lot of energy, but at the same time need to become more and more sustainable. Can startups also help in that direction to actually have a bigger impact there, and especially not only a bigger impact, but a faster impact?
Definitely. I mean, the sustainability topic is high on the agenda for many corporates. So, of course, on the one hand, our Infineon portfolio is targeted a lot towards power efficiency, and that in itself basically is a sustainability topic. For example, a big growing market, you all know, AI data center, energy consumption goes up like hell. So we are delivering products to deliver power to the main processors in those data centers. So from the grid to the GPU, all this energy chain has to be as efficient as possible. And that's where our products that's what our products enable. And whenever there is a startup in this area where we can make the next step together to increase this efficiency even further is high on the list, where we want to engage. And then, of course, on the corporate level, in the chip production itself, it's quite energy intensive. Also there, of course, we are looking at solutions that can drive CO2 footprint down, for example, or even to calculate the CO2 footprint without being a massive administrative burden. So to automate these kind of things are things that we also look at an Infineon level.
What drives us is when we link it a bit to the AI portion is how this energy demand goes up of the data centers you mentioned already. So you play a role on the power conversion from the semiconductor side, and they look at us and say, but your power inductors are not good enough. But we found solutions already now to make better power inductors. So overall, if you save 1% energy in your data center, roughly now it's about 2 million households could get energy from if you do this. Even the heating goes down by saving energy and make it more efficient. So that's where we work actively and even with semiconductor component makers together to find better power devices and power management solutions to drive the power demand of these chips down to higher efficiencies. That's what we can do actively now on that part. The other part is where we encourage people to think about your AI large language models. So we have seen DeepSeek was bringing it down hardly by making it a bit different in the programming of these models. And that's where we look into this portion. And then, of course, you mentioned also edge AI. So has everything to be in a big cloud thing, or can it be really processed on the edge and still be very smart and still can be updated or get more updated information from the field? And for the corporate, is where we incorporated many of these things into a better production yield later on, because before we had many manual processes which the production steps were controlled on output and on CPK values, but never matched together. And so at the end, you found something going weird, but you didn't know where in the process. Was it really happening? It's a bit the mental thing. Or if you have, you learned it just before here on the topics before, this AOI, the automated optical inspection, was ever in place. If you did it manually, you had a failure, or that's if the throughput of 10% would never detected failures. They described it just a bit different. Even with AI, you didn't detect only defective items, you even detected more than defective items. So that's where we have now AI in the game in the factories to really get a better production yield and only sort out those parts which are not good, or improve the processes right away when we see something is going wrong, and to go on back on this process step to make the process step better, and not at the end of the process where every energy was already taken to make it to the final product. That's where we see our responsibility to really go very closely into the production lines.
Is that maybe exactly the much needed opportunity for the European ecosystem to make a change when it comes to AI, that we are the ones who have the know-how to make that whole thing sustainable enough to make it actually work on a much, much bigger scale?
I'm not sure if this is just a European opportunity. But yeah, I mean, you are right. I mean, we have, or it was mentioned before, I mean, we have the industrial base in Europe. So I think this gives us some kind of advantage, because in the industry, sustainability also plays a big role, a lot of energy consumption also there. So I think the customers are, many of the customers are here for those AI solutions around sustainability. So that that gives us, or startups that are in Europe and that are developing solutions for industry, for example, an advantage, yeah, but it's not an automatic sure thing that we will gain against or that startups gain against competition from outside of Europe. Yeah,
nothing to add on.
If you have, if you would have to give maybe two or three recommendations to startups that are looking into collaborating with big corporations, and like things they could change next Monday, what would that be?
For a startup, to be clear about your market approach for your idea, and can I really explain it very short, my idea, and very clear from a helicopter view, not the detailed view of all the technical aspects eventually you think are important. It has to be sold, so to say. Yeah, I have to sell my idea to a team eventually, not so much deep diving in that topic, but I have to describe it for a bigger audience, which can say as a customer, yeah, I will buy this thing. And then for the corporate where I go to work with, it's to also understand what that company is doing. And does it fit to me? Also that's important, that I don't have later a situation where I get totally blocked because they want to take the company in full extent, or me as a startup in a full extent, and then I'm out of the driver's seat to make my decisions agile and fast. That's why we have startups. Eh? We don't put them in the corporate context too much. We want to get them as a small rocket flying and lifting off much more faster than the big corporate can do. So we have to be, as a startup, have to really see, do they let me do my job, and to which kind of freedom, and how long will they be supporting me? Because sometimes our hardware things need longer time to market. And that's a bit the frustration what we see sometimes. The investors are in a too short term thinking, and then they leave the trust that the thing will make it way to market, and they give up too early. and then the startup dies before it could really go to market. And that is what we find a lot of times here in Europe, that we are a bit too, they're not trustful from the corporate side into the startup, it will make it market. Or from the other side, will this company support me in going to market, also in marketing activities, joint marketing activities, a team supporting me to get a better market approach or marketing approach, because I'm eventually too technical. I'm not the best marketer, so to say. That has to fit together, and then it's complementary, and then it can go fast. That's what I would say. Be a bit cautious about what is my partner, my venture capitalist, going into this, doing or expecting from me. To have it clear and made clear what is time to market really meaning for my device, my application, my solution.
Yeah, I can completely agree and add to that that. From a startup perspective, make it as easy as possible for the corporate to engage. Think about this win-win situation that you mentioned already when you approach the corporate, yeah, so that it's not us who figure out what could be the benefit for us. But ideally, you already come with a proposal. The startup comes with a proposal and a vision where the benefit lies for them and for us. And this is a good basis to start the discussion. We can, of course, disagree and maybe have slightly other ideas, but this is a good starting point for us to engage. And in the end, it's like also if you want to convince an investor, also convince us about the market you are in is highly attractive and that if you grow, it's also attractive for us. So this kind of thinking and mindset should be there. I mean, we support startups, but we want to have a win also for Infineon, and a balanced. So take this balanced view from the start.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. Did you enjoy the episode? Follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you prefer listening to your favorite podcast shows. Forward Thinkers is a 48 Forward podcast produced in the 48 Forward Studios in Munich.